Man, there's like so many fucking buttons on my audio interface. I don't know what most of them do. And I think
it's actually turned up a little bit too far anyway.
But, I'm just happy we got Schultz's audio solved. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel pretty excited about that too.
Mm-hmm.
24 months later, the audio is crispy.
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Game of Nodes, a podcast about things and
about
shits.
Things.
A yeah. Podcast.
A podcast. Well, you know, it's always whenever the phrase here is like a podcast about, well, it's not really fucking about anything. So if you've hung around for the 16 minutes it took to press the button, our one viewer, Lil D, welcome. Yep, we have exactly one viewer. Cool.
Well, what have we done? We joined 20 minutes late and let me hit that.
Yeah. I mean, that's just really shows the kind of loyalty of the people who watch this. Like, they're not here after 15 minutes. So I'm going to go and make some tea, some breakfast. So how is everybody doing anyway? It's been busy. It's been network launches, market pumps, market dumps.
Network almost launches.
Network almost launch. Almost launch?
Well, like pre-mainnet launch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like the ones in the pipeline.
The ones in the pipeline.
Discovering new chains that have been out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's like getting some introductions lately of just these things that have been running in testnet for like a year.
Oh, really?
That no one knew about.
Yeah.
trying to penetrate the secret squirrel networks.
A guy jumped into our Discord yesterday to find out information about Nomad or Monad.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows anything about Monad, first of all. That's number one. Number two was, hey, can you share anything about the Discord? And I was like, I don't have any. Like, we're not validating. Like, we don't really know what's going on. And he goes, cool, 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 cool. For validator related matters, could you share the best way to contact their team or the channel you use to become a validator for them? And I'm like,
listen, man, I was just asking questions, all right? Like, you could just help me out, asshole.
Was it someone from Monad or someone just trying to get in the click? With Monad.
Someone trying to get into the click.
Someone.
Oh man, they are impossible.
Get in line, dude.
Yeah.
It's a long line of people trying to get in the click.
Remember that dude, Serp, that we met in Austin? Is like the marketing guy.
Right? Oh yeah. Yeah.
I just send him a message every now and then. He just hangs me on red every fucking time.
Well, he left Monad, right?
Did he? He's still got Monad in his name.
I think. Oh really? Well, maybe we're talking about somebody else. Because there was, I thought maybe Schultz, maybe we were at some Cosmos event. I thought, yeah, we met somebody from I thought it was the Monad team that we met. And then we reached out to him. I got introduced and then a bunch of other types of, and then basically that person left and I keep pinging, what's going on? And like, we're in a group with that team a little bit, but again, like we don't get too much.
Was it Monad? There was
it might've been somebody else
that left and became a developer somewhere else. And we were like, hey, can we get in with the other team still?
Maybe that wasn't Monad. Wasn't Barra? I don't know what the heck that would have been. I don't know. Yeah, anyway. We're all looking for the Monad click for sure.
Yeah, man. I can get read. I can get a message through. I can get read by Monad. So I don't elicit a response. I guess I'm not saying anything interesting.
Well, not a team change, but like somebody who took over that role for some of those discussions. And so it felt like 2 years of conversation went out the window, starting all over. But that's all right. What are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't always work out. There's been, some other networks that we've like put a lot of time into or at least been around a long time for.
Right.
Got ignored.
Speaking of launches, so Elixir launched. Elixir launched. Well, it was mainnet launched a couple weeks ago, I think is what it was. And it went public.
What did?
Elixir.
Right? Yeah.
And you called it out before, but I was just logging in to retweet this silly podcast. And I had like 25 retweets of all these people who are the Elixis Genesis validators. A mix of institutional powerhouses and expert operators. Like,
where
there's
do you
a lot
think
of
we fall.
I know. And other.
Yeah. That's deep in the other.
We were in deep in the other. Yep.
Did you join that network, Schulte, or did you go into that? Did they adorn you with a Genesis slot?
We were part of it. I don't know that we're a Genesis validator. Now I'm curious.
You would have been tagged many times if you were. Who does the Twitter? I don't know what to call it. Who does the X for Lev?
The tweets.
I don't do
the tweets.
What do they call it now? It's not a tweet anymore, is it? It's a send.
Oh
X.
Yeah, we are.
It's a post.
We are one of the Genesis validators.
Yeah.
Are you in the? Are you deep in the other as well, or are you like? Elevate.
We are number 24, so we are below you two.
Oh no! Yeah, I'm.
Well, that's all
10,
deep in the other,
10,
right?
10 and 11, respectively.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Republic was like up there in top left, and so of course I had to ping him or ping Will over there and be like, "Hey, like you don't even know what this is. Don't you tell me? Like I don't think you even do this. That's funny.
So when can we actually stake then?
I have no idea. Okay. I should ask the tweets. Because everybody on Twitter knows more about this than I do, I think is basically what's happening.
So, Schulte, in hardware news, King Nodes now have their own AS number.
That means literally nothing to me.
That's pretty hot.
Okay. Never mind.
So can I look? I can look it up and I can see a King Nodes AS number.
You can. I am my own ISP. You can look up my AS number, see all my IP addresses.
Oh, nice. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. All those fucking Captain Sleuths are out there with their softwares saying, Hetzner and fucking whatever. Well, now it comes up with King Nodes, King Blockchain. So party of one.
That's pretty cool.
There will be no other networks on my network.
I'm searching. I don't see it.
I would have to tell you the AS number.
I don't think so. I should be able to search by string.
By what?
By string.
Oh, right.
Do-do-do-do-do-do. Let me see if I can find so many kings. Holy shit.
We should be able to look it up via your IP address, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't have it.
That would be easy. That would be easy, but yeah. That's pretty hot. That's actually pretty decent. It's not King Nodes, is it? It might be King Blockchain. Or maybe it's just not updated yet. That's actually pretty decent marketing.
Did you try Big Ball's
blockchain? I didn't. That's what you should have done, but.
Man, it's a fucking rigmarole to get some IPv4 addresses, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it's a bit pricey, and it can be, it's nice to rent, and it's cool to be able to take. Do you own those? You didn't buy those. You're renting them, right?
So we kind of rent them. It's like there's a organization that you can join as a member. And as a paying member, you are allotted an IPv4/24.
Okay.
Yeah. So you get your own AS and you control the interconnects and everything for your allotment.
Hmm.
So yeah, but you don't own them.
Yeah,
they're portable. I can interconnect them anywhere I want.
So you're basically leasing them, but you can move them if you wanted to move them.
Yeah, so I can definitely I just control the interconnect, and I can use BGP with them now and have like multi home. I have the two incoming. Internet connections now, so I can have failover routers and that type of stuff. So
that's fun.
It is a lot more like robust to be able to do that than rely on your ISP for a like range.
It's not easy though, running BGP.
No,
like it's a whole thing, especially in like a rack situation like that. Unless your provider does it, if you give them like, "Here's my IP, and I want to have and let and you pay for some of them to do it," which would be the way to do it.
The the fucking emails, man. It's like all of these like interconnect companies and stuff and IP providers and shit are emailing me now. It's like, oh yeah, we saw you.
Oh yeah.
We just I see you. Can we get a meeting to talk about, I don't know, fucking IPs? I'm like,
You're balls enough to have your own IPs set, so that's cool.
No, they're like, so you know, Cogent? Cogent's emailed me like 10 times.
Oh, really?
Like, oh, have you seen my other 9 emails? Can you get a meeting?
We use them.
What for, man?
So they use that as a lead source. They're watching the IP ASN or AS registrations and using it to say, hey, were you hosting this shit? We have data centers.
Yeah, but they're like, they just want to interconnect. They're like, yeah, interconnect with us. I'm like, fucking.
For what?
For what? I'm already connected with something. I don't need.
That's weird.
Yeah. But anyway.
That's cool. That's nice. It's a nice thing
that
to do.
Is cool. So, you know, that whole thing is advancing. I'm running out of RAM already. Need more RAM. Need more drives. You know, I don't know, Serp, if you have you done any hyperconverged storage before? You would have with your with like your VMware deployments, right? So like distributed.
Not at Rhino.
No.
I don't think it's, I just don't think it's fast enough for what we do, but it doesn't really matter. Cause I wasn't, I mean, when we were originally building all this out, there's some things that we should do that for. So I like in our own data centers are turning more into like monitoring management and signing than they are turning into like nodes, which is fine. It's the way it should be. So from that perspective, there is benefit to that. Versus just like having on and some sort of redundant storage and then like moving things across when we want to, which is what we do now. But we've talked about it a couple of times because we do have, I mean, all of our, I mean, the issue with owning all this shit is that it all starts to age out and it's already been a few years now. And so we're starting to have, SSD, obviously we have SSD failures all the time, but, or NVMe failures as well. But now we're starting to get like other types of things that are starting to happen, like fans dying and, you know, like weird shit like that, that ends up just getting stressed over years. So we're starting to replace more hardware. And as we replace more hardware, moving shit is a fucking pain in the ass. Like it just takes, it's just slow to move and I don't have enough room on machines. And so you're kind of like, it's this fucking nightmare jigsaw puzzle of trying to move shit around to get something offline. And then you're going to replace it and you rebuild it and add it to all the distributed port switches and all that shit. It just takes time and it's a pain in the dick. So to answer your question, some of that storage would be easier, because it would just make those moves a lot faster and moving CPU and computer is easy. It's just the drives that really make a, you know, moving a 256 gigabyte, even over 10 gig just takes some time and it's, you know, you gotta have enough room for it and all that kind of shit, which would be nice to get rid of.
So we, like I have migrations over a 50 gig network, which mm-hmm. is reasonably fast.
Yeah.
But so we have two, I have two things, right? So I have on each host, I have like a, an array of Gen 5 disks with, ZFS, mm-hmm. As local storage. So some things run off the local storage and then other things run off hyperconverged storage, which is exactly like what you were talking about before. Like we have, for example, maybe HA proxy is a couple of instances of HA proxy running off hyperconverged storage, other controllers, monitoring, signers, validators that don't like stateless validators, that type of stuff. But all backing nodes at the moment are all on local storage. And a lot of those will stay with our old, depending on like the network and what the expectation is from the network level, mm-hmm. Because you know, part of our appeal has been an Australian validator, so we run some stuff specifically out of Australia for that, and other big heavy items like you know, archives and stuff, it's good to be able to run those locally just with,
yeah, you can't with afford it otherwise storage.
Yeah,
like it's too expensive. It's too rent. Fucking expensive. Yeah
So all the throwaway nodes I think we'll keep elsewhere, but all of the important stuff is like in-house now. But the hyperconverged storage, as you said, is slow mm-hmm. if you don't have shitloads of drives. So mm-hmm. we had the initial idea of having like some bigger drives on there, thinking that, you know, really high performance disks would pick up the slack of, you know, the overhead of a hyperconverged solution, but don't really work out that way. They only go so fast. So we're like getting rid of those disks or keeping them, using them for something else. Mm-hmm. And then I think I'm just going to end up ordering just like boxes of like 960 gig disks, like older gen 960 gig disks, and see how that goes. Just populate everything.
You mean NVMEs or what do you mean?
Like Gen 3 or 4 NVMEs.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like enterprise. 960s or 1.792s or something like that.
But enterprise, like, you know, you slide it in.
Enterprise
right?
drives, U.2. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's basically what we have. It's kind of what, that's kind of been our thing around it. We, you know, again, I think it's a nice thing. You really should have a mix of those, I think would be good, because like things like, you know, Postgres or like some database type stuff or monitoring or, you know, some sort of storage things, or I don't know, maybe logs, shit like that. Like that stuff's nice to have in a centralized piece that you can just have a block and you're not worried about if it's a little bit slow, it doesn't make a difference, right? You're not missing anything. And then leave nodes to be nodes, right? Or even signers. Signers are a great thing with that. You can just move that around CPU, doesn't matter. You know, if you do that.
Yeah, things that don't have like a whole lot of IO.
Rights. Yeah, a lot of rights. Yeah.
And so we tag everything in here. So if it's like on the Ceph, the hyperconverged storage.
Yeah.
We can tag it then as fully HA. So we get all the failover and everything. Mm-hmm. Works perfectly, which is great. But other things, yeah, we either have to migrate them or just let them go down if I need to restart a host or something. But it's pretty quick to migrate. Like even a terabyte's pretty quick over 50 gig.
Yeah. It's really, and I don't move that shit that often. You know what I mean? It's not that it moves that often. Just when it does, for me, usually we're constantly bumping up against having too much shit and not enough storage. So then it's like, all right, what machine has enough room for this? And oh fuck, this machine only has 256 gigs, and I'm shutting down a machine with a terabyte of RAM. Well, you shut down a machine with a terabyte of RAM with a bunch of shit on it. Like, it's tough to find places to go stick this type of stuff, right? And some of that stuff can just turn off. Like I don't move everything. If it's a redundant node, I don't give a shit. But if it's some other type of stuff, you gotta like find a place for it and like, you know, so we just got another batch of kind of last gen hardware in, and then we had to order RAM for it. I think we have like something along the lines of 16 gig sticks or something like that we have. So unboxed all that and try to get that stuff figured out, what's going on, what. You can never have enough RAM in those machines though. Like, that's one thing we always like over provision.
So I've been assisting like a friend of mine who's got a software development company. He's been building his own cluster for Kubernetes.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he gets some new hardware in the mail, he like sends me a photo. But he's on like older hardware, like Gen 14 Dell stuff. And he got this bag of RAM. And it's just
a sack.
It's a sack. Literally just a sack of RAM sticks, like a garbage bag. And I was like, holy shit, man.
Yeah, so this stuff is like a mix of like high-speed DDR3 and early DDR4. Like, they're not like expensive things, so they just end up, you know, like some enterprise gets rid of whatever, a thousands of the sticks that they bought over the years, right? They're just getting rid of this shit, and so they part all the stuff out and just like, I'll send you a 20-pound bag of RAM. And then like,
yeah, some, I was just good. Amazed that they're like not even in a tray. It's just
no,
like,
just a fucking...
Just chuck in a bag.
Just get it out of here. It's like a garage sale. Like, just get the shit out of here.
Yeah.
I don't even care. You
got all these old, like, Xeon Gold CPUs that were, like, I don't know, $50 each, but they would, like, some of them were just butchered from transport. They're just a little floating around.
It's all right. Clean them up a little bit. Just blow on them. Yeah. It's fine.
He bought some, like, SAS NVMe, SAS SSDs.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think like they're all like 960s. Oh, sorry, that was SATA SSDs. I think one of them had like 7 years of fucking like hours on it.
Oh, really? Yeah. You can't find big SAS drives. We've all of our stuff has SAS and SATA backplanes, and SAS is usually nice if you can find them. But they're always like either they're 15,000 RPM spinners, which can be useful in certain situations, or they're smaller SSDs. They didn't really make like. I don't think there's any 4 terabyte or 8 terabyte SAS SSDs. I don't think those things exist.
I have 3.84 terabyte SAS SSDs.
Yeah, that might be the biggest that they make.
Yeah, it could be. They're pretty like they're not much cheaper than NVMe.
No, in some
cases they're like more expensive, even secondhand.
No, they should be. They usually are more expensive. A little bit less. I think if I remember correctly, a little less latency, more direct path.
Well, they're just discontinued. NVMe's got a more direct path because it's connected to the CPU.
Yeah, I'm not talking.
There's nothing better about SAS. It's just fucking.
I'm talking about them. Yeah, no, I'm talking about like NVMe interfaces. I'm just talking about like just the what was available in our 2018 to 2020 frame of hardware that we own.
Yeah, there's like well, I mean, it's been hard to get hardware lately. You're paying ridiculous money for just mediocre shit.
Yeah.
I think it's getting a little bit better now. I think the storage prices are coming down a little bit. But when all of the AI hype started and they started building like GPU arrays everywhere, like with millions of GPUs, that put like a massive strain on flash because like sure you need GPUs, but the GPUs take memory. And then the systems with the GPUs in them take memory. And then you have to have huge storage arrays to go along with the GPUs. And so, I mean, the hype was on NVIDIA and stuff like that with all of the GPUs that they were selling for AI, like all the H100s and the H200s and stuff. And people didn't really talk about the strain that put on the supply chain for storage and flash. But it was real. And the fucking prices went through the roof.
Right.
Over the period of like 6 months. So hopefully that's like starting to alleviate now or they've ramped up supply or whatever. But yeah, if you've been buying flash over the last year, you've probably been stung the AI tax.
I should have been buying more NVIDIA. NVIDIA is what I should have been buying.
Stocks?
Yeah.
Stunks. So I remember like just after, do you remember... NVIDIA had a bit of a run during COVID when everyone was buying like gaming GPUs.
Yeah.
And then after COVID, it like crashed. Like when everyone stopped buying GPUs, just the ass fell out of it for like a week. And then they're like, oh,
by the way,
did we mention about AI?
We have this other group that's growing at 400% a quarter, FYI.
It just made the entire pump of COVID for NVIDIA just look like a little blip on the fucking chart.
What are they ridiculous. Like?
Top five now?
No, I think they're by far the largest company in the world, aren't they?
Are they?
Mm-hmm.
Bigger than Apple?
Oh, yeah. I think so.
Oh, shit.
I'm pretty sure. They're like, what's their market cap? 3.33 and Apple is... 3.76. No, they're behind. They're behind. Apple's been up a little bit the last month or two, which I don't know why. I just don't understand the stock. It doesn't make any sense to me. There is no strategy at this organization. Zero.
At Apple?
Yeah. All this AI stuff is such a fucking bolt-on. Last minute. Oh, shit. I guess people want this stuff. iPhone is like, it's totally stagnant. Vision Pro is dead. The watch is going nowhere. Hardware's fucking awesome. Don't get me wrong. But like, what's next? Where are they going? I don't know.
Yeah, I still like their laptops.
Me too. That only accounts for like 4% of the business or whatever, or 14% or something like that. Yeah,
I remember when
it's up 20% in 6 months. Crazy.
They ignored their like compute arm for so long when they when they first started the iPhone and it sort of took off. Because Mac was dead. Like no one really used it. Like maybe the odd rich person would just have one of those funky colored plastic things lying around their house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
software has always been deeply, deeply, deeply popular.
Yeah,
never fell out of vogue.
But it was not a consumer device. Like I'm going back to like the early 2000s. You know, where you'd see like a G4 floating around someone's house or some shit, the green plastic fucking see through thing.
Apple had the Motorola. They went to PowerPC, which was a nice little bump at that time, but Intel was so fucking good at fab for so many years, and x86 was just kicking ass, right? And Steve finally came back, and then they obviously before iPhone, they made a decision to move to Intel, And that took some time to be able to do that. Intel is by far the biggest fab. Let's go x86. That happened right when they moved to Intel. And then after iPhone launched and the revenue went to 70% or 80% of the all revenue, and you look at the Mac that's sitting there as Intel, and Intel started falling apart because they started going to shit. Like that company, I mean, that guy just was just exited yesterday, right? What's his face? And so Intel's had, I mean, it's such a sad story. We'll see what happens, but it's the only one that makes any, the only fab left in the United States other than TSMC that has some stuff here. But, and then when all the TSMC stuff happening with ARM and with iPhone, and then obviously moving, then getting off Intel because Intel had zero strategy around desktop whatsoever, no CPU strategy, just awful. So that's the reason they moved to their own chipset, right? To take it all in house to be able to get out of the situation. And now here we are. Like, there's no, I mean, it's AMD. Who else is doing major chip, like massive chipset design? AMD, Qualcomm, and Apple? That's really it?
Yeah.
Intel's not doing it.
Did I ever share my Intel Bitcoin story?
I think Risk are working hard. Yeah, man, go for it.
When I was an intern at Intel in 2013, I worked on the Xeon Phi team, which was kind of Intel's argument for what a graphics card should be. It's like 190 or CPUs on PCI bus. My team went mine Bitcoin to test it out. So it was basically like a data center of Xeon Phis in mineral oil to cool them, mining Bitcoin to see like failure modes. They're like,
really?
Yeah, really. They, I think this was like my manager's pet project to mine Bitcoin with it. And so I had to like sneak around to find out how it happened. And he was like, yeah, we're doing that. Just don't tell anyone. but yeah, so he used to mine Bitcoin with like 1,000 Xeon Phi cards, which in 2013, I think probably would have been pretty decent. I don't know if they had ASICs back then for it.
So where is all the Bitcoin now?
Where is the Bitcoin?
Great question. I have no idea. I never like followed up too far with it. I just thought it was funny that
mine Bitcoin. Somebody on that team is like on a fucking beach.
Yeah, he's not on a beach, man. He's like in a Utah dump fucking hunting around for that USB stick.
Just or that, yeah.
Funnel it away into some wallet stuck on a USB stick.
Fucking, I know it's here somewhere, man. I'm going to spend the rest of my life looking for it.
Well, my manager was a prepper too. So like the vehicle he'd take him to work every day had like a huge ham radio on the side. And he'd always be talking about like his new, like the way he's improving his cabin for whenever the big one comes, the big one being the Cascadia subduction fault, I think it's called in Oregon, where like, there's supposed to be an earthquake, kind of like the San Andreas fault, except Oregon's basically just supposed to fall off the face of the earth effectively. And so Oregon has a lot of preppers for that. So he would talk about that a lot.
Added another 3 feet of concrete to my bunker.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of thing.
turn that Bitcoin into concrete.
Well, he would go up on the roof of Intel and put satellite dishes up there so that he could bounce it off of Intel to like talk to anyone in basically the Portland area. Radio antennas, not satellite, radio antennas.
Yeah.
Do you guys watch that British dude on YouTube? He's like digging tunnels like under his house and shit.
Oh yeah.
Colin Firth.
I like that dude.
No, yeah. I haven't heard of him.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. If you want to lose a day, just go back and watch all his tunnel videos. It's,
he's building that car lift or whatever right now.
Yeah, he started off with a bunker like in his backyard. He just dug a big fucking hole and put a bunker in there and covered it in concrete.
Yeah, just make some noise underground, all that kind of shit.
Yeah, so he would like go into his garden shed and then just like open a hatch and go down into the man cave he had there. Then he just like
it's a good idea.
Started building like these fucking tunnels under the ground to go up to his house. So it comes up in like a cupboard in his house.
Uh-huh.
And then he's like, oh, well, now I'll like make another tunnel that goes out the front. And he's just excavated this massive fucking hole out the front of his house and filled it with like concrete and steel. And so he's got this big cavity out the front underneath his driveway, and he's making like a car lift. So the roof will slide back and his car will come out of the driveway.
He wanted to put a round table down there where it would, like he'd pull in and then like it would like
turn like a around.
Rotisserie. Yeah. I don't think it's got enough room, but yeah.
It's pretty hilarious. It's definitely like YouTube has just given like people with crazy ideas just the leverage to do whatever the fuck they want.
Dude, how's that guy have that much energy?
I don't know, man.
It's fucking crazy.
He's not a young man anymore.
He's not. Like, but the other thing, that pole that was like on a concrete thing, where he like gets on and he swings all the way down to the ground, like hold on. And like, he built all this wacky ass shit.
Thing that he made, where you just run around in circles. Like,
that's right. I know. I'm always amazed like how much energy that guy has.
This massive fucking bun. You know, there's this other dude that I just cannot stop watching. He's, I can't remember what his name is, but the YouTube channel is Outdoor Boys. It's just this guy in fucking Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got 63 million subscribers. Like, I know it's that dude. Insane. He must be making a shitload of money out of YouTube. Right. But he just lives in like a regular ass house in Alaska. You can tell he's making bank because of his camping equipment is always like good shit.
He's the one that'll like dig a
fucking hole into like,
and then like build a fire down there, and like he'll build a bed in there and all that kind of shit.
Yeah. It's just like, I'm gonna go camping in the woods for 3 days and build a bunker.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting, man. He's just like, yeah, I'm just gonna dig this out. And he's like, I've just spent 4 hours digging out 400 cubic meters.
I know. The patience, and, man. The fucking patience.
Yeah. He just like, he's like, oh, I gotta heat up the ground. You know, just go and chop down like 40 fucking trees.
Yeah.
This is a hatchet I've got from my time in Japan.
At the boys.
Crazy fucking Yakuza looking thing. The point is, I really enjoy those videos. I only discovered that dude like just the other day.
Colin.
Yeah. Now it's like my bedtime video every night. I watch one of his crazy shit because they're good lengths too. It's like 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a good family man. He like gets the kids out there.
Are y'all
toboggan sleds and shit?
Are y'all caught up on Drain Addict or what?
Fuck, I do not watch Drain Addict, man. I don't know how the fuck you watch that. It looks so boring.
He's a good dude.
He's a great guy. I'd love to have a chat to him at the pub.
The other one to watch at night is Wristwatch Revival with Marshall. Guy's got total like calm voice. He basically tears down like older Omega and Rolex and all the types of watches from the 50s, 60s, 70s with like stories to them. Little voiceover, takes everything down, cleans it all up, gets it working, polishes it, makes it beautiful. Total, you're 15 minutes out, you're done. It's all over. So like, he's got like a Bob Ross type of voice to him, just kind of like, just nice and quiet. Nice and
calming.
Yeah, just like calming. We're just going to take this apart, undo this screw.
Have you seen any videos from Johnny Q90?
No.
He does like model engines, and he doesn't talk at all.
Oh, really? Just does it?
It's just hands.
Yeah.
And he like just machines all of this stuff. He has these projects where he just machines entire motors, like piece by piece by piece by piece, and he just fucking records all of it. You watch like a 3 hour long
Johnny Q,
the guy making a motor. But yeah, I don't know. He must have 1,000 model engines by now.
Yeah, if you like that type of stuff, you should also watch RC Test Flight. That
RC
dude's
RC Test Flight for
planes? RC Test Flight. He's in Seattle. He builds and like does a ton. Like that guy's fucking awesome. Like great engineer. Builds like a ton of planes, hydrofoils, propeller design type stuff. Like heavily engineering, but like can build anything, number one. Like 3D prints a ton of shit, does a ton of modeling, like really strong, smart dude. Like he does like a bunch of autonomous stuff and things like that. You'd like it. It's pretty fun. Guy's he's like crazy, like really, like really intelligent. It's like fun to watch.
What's your go-to, Schultzy? Learn Linux TV?
I don't really have a go-to right now. I used to, honestly, with kiddo, I really enjoy.
I think you'd be watching YouTube all the time in those situations.
Yeah, man.
I'd be watching that shit 24/7.
I have the morning shift, and when you're watching the kid, you can't really do anything else. So I just like put on YouTube or Plex.
Fair. I mean, yeah, I should. No, I don't know. I used to. He's so noise sensitive right now.
Stare at the wall.
Stare at the wall.
Stare at the wall, pretty much. It really depends on what like his mood is at the time. Otherwise, I'll play games. watch TV,
mm.
watch movies. But it's really depends on like how he's sleeping. Lately, I've been I've got a big old yoga ball, and I'll bounce him while I do other things because he can't like get woken up when he's on the yoga ball being bounced. So I'll just sit on the yoga ball for like 6 hours in the morning, bouncing him, so I can basically do whatever I want so long as I'm on said yoga ball.
What is he like in a chest thing or something?
Nope, he is on a pillow in my lap.
Oh, really? Okay. So you just like bounce it, you just kind of hold on to him and just like do whatever?
Yeah.
It works.
Schultz, how many months ahead of us were you? You like 4 weeks or 6 weeks or?
I don't know. He just turned 4 months last week.
Okay. So yeah, about a month. Is he is he sit up and stuff yet or?
Yeah. Yep. He's sitting. Yeah. He's started to be able to do like squats kind of things. He can't crawl or anything yet, but
mm-hmm.
he does squat.
Ass up in the air.
Yeah.
Like pulls his knees up and things like that. Yeah. Yeah. Like, dude, you're upside down. You want to do this, but the other way. Well, I could see that too.
He's been especially spit uppy lately. And so he did that yesterday. Ass went up and they just fucking vomited so much. It was like at least 3 ounces. I was like, really? All That's over funny. Me.
Our dude has like no reaction when he like vomits. He'll just be sitting in his like chair or something, like in the pram, and then it just he wouldn't even like open his mouth. It just like just come out like and just fucking everywhere. It's like a liter, and you're like, fucking hell, man.
That's funny.
Yeah,
and he's like,
I'm ready.
I'm stoked. Super happy.
Yeah. That's normal, right?
I'm hungry now.
Yeah,
asshole. Feed me.
Yeah.
And he's storing up those curds everywhere, like under the fat rolls under his chin. Milk yep. curds.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, man.
They're pretty entertaining. You can kind of just look at them. Lifting their ass in the air, chilling.
That's it.
So do we have like, what's on the agenda for the next couple of weeks? There's more networks going yet. There's things in the works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you guys would be well into that.
I mean, there's ones that we're waiting on.
Like there's a fair few on my list. There's like a Warden's ongoing at the moment. Aztec, still waiting for Particle do something. Nillion's ongoing. Maverick. Monad, if anyone can get onto them. There's a bunch of like... the DVT stuff happening too. So I think we just got onto mainnet on Obol, Lido Obol. And I think SSV is just around the corner. Schultz, you're already on SSV, right? Did you guys do the Obol testnet? Are you live with Obol as well or just SSV?
We're on SSV and we are in two Obol clusters.
You're in two? Okay. Our first go around at the moment, we're just getting those live now. That's all looking pretty good. Runs well out of the out of Australia too. Nice long block times on Ethereum.
Yeah, so. Yeah, you got plenty of time.
Yeah, you can run that. You know, we were using our Ethereum cluster in Japan, but ended up making it local. It was just a little bit too much latency. Didn't look good on the stats. I think it worked fine. Like it tested just fine, but it's like 200 milliseconds of latency.
Is there another Round Obol trip. Testnet coming?
Not sure if there's another one at the moment. So, you know they're doing the SSV right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, did they just wrap that up? We just wrapped that up, right?
Excuse me, yeah. We just wrapped it up this week, actually. We just shut everything down. Well, actually, I didn't shut anything down, but we just exit all and removed all the validators just a couple days ago.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we should be able to shut that down soon, though.
Yeah. No, we can now they're removed. I just haven't done it yet. I don't even, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I haven't done it either, but it's just a matter of pressing delete.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see kind of what I haven't heard anything related to mainnet. Our cluster did pretty well. So I think the bar for that's pretty low, right? Isn't it like,
I think like it's 80%. If you don't royally fuck up, you're pretty good. Yeah, like I think even the sign percentage is pretty low. We had a little bit of downtime there when we're moving some stuff around. Don't think anyone really said anything about it. yeah. cluster performs as a whole. So,
yeah, we had, I think we, a couple times we had the distinction of, what was it? It was called absolute top in terms of network performance for our cluster, which was actually pretty cool. I don't know what that means. Yeah. Like, which means like there's nobody with better uptime, better signing performance, better something or other. I have no idea. But yeah, we had that a couple times, which I didn't even realize, but there's a website you can track that shit. So it's, I mean, everybody did a pretty good job. Like everybody had uptime and there's like little things down here and there, but it was, you know, it doesn't matter. So that's cool. Anisha, is there any timeline on that?
I'm not in Anisha. I thought it was live already since ages ago.
You're not in Anisha, really?
I thought you were.
No, I couldn't. Like, when they started that testnet, it seemed to start like overnight. Like, no one was talking about it. And then I woke up the next morning and they're like, oh, everyone's missing on Anisha. I'm like, the fuck are you talking about? What the fuck is this network?
You got that.
It was like discovered and joined while I was like, asleep, it's much pure, like Aptos.
That sounds like a UTC plus 12 issue right there.
Yeah, 10 UTC plus 10. Yeah, man, it's amazing how many times that's happened where something has just materialized while I was sleeping.
Right. No, I know. Yeah. I know. Well, now at least I know. Like, I mean, I don't think anything's come up where I have done that. But at least I know if I hit you on Signal, like at least get you up if it's worthwhile. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you are the only person who is like whitelisted to make my phone ring while I'm asleep. Except
for like if there's something that's going on where it would be worth that way, I would do it. But there hasn't been, so.
No. Yeah, I don't. I'm whitelisted on yours, right? I can't remember.
My signal is, I don't really get too many signals. So I think for the most part, it's all open.
But when, like, do you put your phone on not disturb when you're sleeping?
I do, but yeah, you're right. Actually, that contact is listed. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's only
it
you.
It works the
my
same
partner.
Way. Yeah, it's the same way. Will she use Signal?
No, but her number is whitelisted. So it doesn't matter the app. It'll work. Same as you. It doesn't matter if you call me or use Signal. Okay. It'll still come through.
Oh, yeah. Then I guess I do have that then. Okay. That's cool. I didn't know that it'd work that way.
Yeah, it doesn't work with like Discord though, because there's no number registered in there. But Signal, like, you know, it registers, like Signal, you go in like as a regular contact, I guess, in Signal when you add someone to it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that kind of works, but the other way doesn't. Autonity's getting close to mainnet launch.
Yep.
Are you in there too, Schultz?
Yep, yes.
Yeah. Did you get up last night or did James do that?
James did it.
Nice. That's I'm glad they've actually done a few iterations of that testnet now, because the whole process of getting that set up is very different to what we're used to on other things. And like the initial learning curve when you're reading that documentation is like, what in the fuck is going on?
It's pretty thorough.
I remember like, shit, man, there's been no other network where I've had to like ask so many questions. And it's like, well, what is this? And why am I doing this other thing? And what's happening here? But now it sort of all just makes sense. So it's been a good exercise going through it a couple of times. I think like they've given the option to either, you know, generate all new keys or reuse old ones for relaunches of that network. I think every time we've like opted to generate new keys just to get the process down.
Yeah.
But it runs well out here in the big down under.
Yeah. Like that chain runs well. Like that
It's very light. Like I had a look at the, I beefed up that machine and I looked at the resource usage this morning. Granted, there's probably not much action on it right now.
Yeah.
But man, it'd run on a potato.
It is Tendermint based, but is the EL side also Tendermint, or do they bake something else in there? Because the logs look like a RethGeth type of log, at least in terms of format and those types of things. There is Tendermint in there, I do know that, but I swear it's one binary running, so I'm not sure it's not like Bera or, you know, Anisha or something else that has like an ELCL type structure. Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't. It's all one binary. It is
all one binary. It does, but it peers really well. It consumes blocks like crazy. Like during catch up, it does that great thing where, you know, it'll do like 2,000 blocks a second just to catch up and blow through transactions. Like that stuff's really nice when it does that. That's cool.
There's been a lot of like different implementations of that Cosmos SDK or Tendermint consensus.
Yeah.
Lately, man, this year has just been so many different teams come on and just do their own thing with it.
Yeah.
Man, there's like a handful right now that we're sort of looking at, and they're all different. Even just different implementations of how they do their EVM, like, because everyone wants to use EVM, right? But there's like hardly anyone's doing the same thing. Seen a couple of projects now using what is it, the Evmos one.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's been improved since the days of Evmos. I abandoned Evmos a while ago because didn't they shut it down?
No, they cut the val set down like to the bones. Schultz
like
still
five,
be,
right, or something.
Schultz
like that.
Might be in there still.
20, I think. No, we're not in there, which I'm stoked about.
Just polka. Yeah, it was great. It was great.
You don't like a 400 gig state file or
no state sync, nothing. Just grows forever.
Yeah, so hopefully, like, there's been a lot of improvements on that. I feel like there has been. There's some big names getting involved with it now, so a lot of devs looking at it. I imagine if it's not that great, there'd be improvements. So.
I don't think any of the Evmos issues were actually EVM related, right? Most of that stuff was
state related.
State.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see that? Yes, and no, because they started off with like some really inefficient shit. And like improved it later on, but it was already too late. So,
right.
Which is kind of like, I wouldn't say it was inefficient, but, you know, Say launched with the IAVL database and then they improved that over time with the Say DB. So,
Say Dib.
Yeah. It is just so much better, the Say DB than the IAVL. Oh, yeah. Like we're running archives on both. And now the way the network is, I'm really struggling with IAVL to stay up to date. So luckily my node restarts every day and goes into block sync mode after its daily backup. So it catches up once a day. So it never really gets too far behind. But 30,000 blocks in a day I get behind before it'll do the backup. So. But that's only in the last, like, it's been slowly increasing over the last week and a half. So we've got to been talking to the guys at Say to try and get to the bottom of it, but no clear indicator at the moment. I don't know if it's just gotten to that size where it's just too big now. Or
just takes too long for it to catch up. I mean, for it to get some, just too unwieldy.
Yeah, it doesn't take too long to catch up. It doesn't even seem to take that long to finalize block. Like, you know, we thought that maybe it was taking too long to read the database and finalize the block, and then it was just slowly getting behind. But
right.
Looking at it, like it's still sub 30 milliseconds most of the time to finalize blocks. So given that they're about 300 millisecond block time, can't be too much of a drama. So yeah, I don't know. Still looking into it. But Say DB, no dramas. And you can really smash it with, you know, RPC users as well. That EVM only one, you know, having people smash that with like 10,000 block requests, calls, fine. You can, you know, millions of requests a day on that thing and it just hums along.
Yeah. Yeah. We are running into, it's actually, it's not that big. It's just the CDB, also the size. Like we try to keep like 4 million or more blocks on the node. Most of ours are somewhere between 4 and 8. So when we like restore, when RPC nodes get to be like maybe 600, 700, 800 gigs, they get a little unwieldy. You know what I mean? Just in terms of like, just not necessarily RPC response time, because the response time isn't that bad, but we've had other issues where maybe it's more on the price feeder nodes, but whatever. So, and so we do like a snapshot restore on those, I always like pull in something that has at least 4 million blocks on it. So we'll try to keep at least, like, if I take a snapshot today, that snapshot wouldn't get used. I mean, that snapshot has at least the last week of data on it, right? No matter what, like 10 days or something like that. And those things are like almost 300 gigs just for that amount of data, which is like really surprising how much is in there for that period of time. You know what I mean? So
it's surprising that like over a short period of time, it'll get reasonably large, but over a long period of time, it doesn't
right
expand as quick as that short period, which is, I find that kind of interesting.
Yeah. Maybe it's just capturing the state as of the, I don't know, the earliest height or something like that. And that takes a specific amount of time. And then there's block level data between there or something. I'm not exactly sure, but yeah, I have noticed that and then moving 300 gig snapshots around is always, you know, it's a pain in the ass. 10 gig or not, it just takes forever. So yeah,
especially over like what the standard you know internet size on those types of nodes is about a gig. So
yeah,
that ain't the fastest.
Most of our stuff is on 10 right now, at least for Say. I think everything, at least in Pacific, I think is all on 10. I don't know, Atlantic and Pacific, I'm sure, or on Arctic, I'm sure not, but at least for Pacific, they're all on 10, because otherwise it's just like those snaps and other types of things just become a bit of a pill. We don't have 50 gigs within the data center, dude. So, you know, got to do with what we can do.
Very, very seriously considering moving that up to 200 gig. So, I think there is some pretty cost-effective 100 gig switches out there, like 16 port 100 gig switches.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I kind of like that. At the moment, we use 100 gig switches, but we use them breakout cables so that they're 100 gig into 4x25s. But I want two 100 gig switches with a 100 gig line from each into each node. Just to absolutely go overboard.
Just to you put that right in the note on your little AS tag.
Just so I can do an iPerf test and be like, yay.
Just put that in every RFP.
What's your backbone? Oh, 200 gig, no worries. Yay.
That's funny.
Proceed to never use that again.
Doesn't matter.
Or migrate a node in 1 second.
It's all fine. As long as you can show it once.
Yeah, that's it. Anyway. So 50 is fine for the time being. Quite a lot of nuances in Proxmox between different network cards. Have you ever heard of OVS? Like Open vSwitch? It's like a software switch.
I think not on Proxmox though. I mean, we use distributed port groups in vSphere. Like, we have virtual switches all over the place, if that's what you mean. But those are, they call them distributed, switch, yeah. Like DPGs, they call them there, because then you build like virtual switches off of like paired 10 gigs. And then you basically say what next go into that virtual switch. And you can have, when we have like 20 VLANs across those switches, right? To say, segment out traffic across to XYZ. Yeah.
So to make VLANs work over here, some network cards need to be on like Linux VLANs and other network cards need to have like a vSwitch with a VLAN attached to it. It's I don't know if they're just nuances of the cards or the drivers, but I don't know. I've been looking into it.
That sounds like an open source issue solved by the hugely expensive enterprise shit that exists. Sounds like one of those problems that gets solved with money.
Do you have like a small niggling itch problem? Fix it with $1 million enterprise solution. Fix it
with a Broadcom vSphere. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. You know, boffins be building shit. Can't give it away for free, right?
Man. What else is? Oh, Supra. Yeah. Shutsu in Supra. I think so. Right.
Yeah, I'm in Supra.
Yeah.
Bought yourself a bag.
It's mainnet, but I don't even know. I don't know.
Is it launched? Is it launched?
It is launched.
I don't know if it's launched or is it like launched? Like launched.
No. Like you can sell tokens on CoinGecko.
Oh, you can?
Yeah. There's like.
Do I have any?
Yes. You have probably $2,000 worth or so.
Really? Where? Have I ever set up a wallet for that fucking thing? I don't even, have.
Must there was an airdrop.
Oh yeah. No, oh, I did
airdrop
see
airdrop commissions.
All right.
Somebody,
are you on Super as well, Sip?
Yeah. Yeah. I got involved with them years and years ago, like way early, in like an iteration before this one. And then it went quiet. It went dead for, I don't know, what was it, 18 months or something like that. And then there was like a new team involved, and then kind of like they reached back out and we, you know, we're like, what's going on? So we've, yeah, it's like one of those things where you're just here. You're not sure why, kind of like type of thing. Like it's got involved in it so early that like I'm still involved in it. And like, we're, you know, I'm doing all the things, and that like they've worked pretty, that team, to their credit, they've worked really hard on trying to build something that's stable. Cause early on, those early testnet stuff, even this in the last year, have been pretty brutal, which Schulte can attest to. Like, I mean, he and I were on calls for 4 hours trying to get a network going, right? With like four of us that we found like tons of issues, or six of us or something like that, like early days. And they're past all that. But there's still some things missing. Like there's no Prometheus endpoint. Like I have almost no visibility to this thing other than a container level.
Yeah.
Container, yes. Container, no. That's it. That's all I have.